Hi everyone, my name is Patrice Ménard, I'm from PMML, and today we have the chance to have Michel Delaurier. Michel Delaurier is the director of Jonathan Weiner Center at for Real Estate at Concordia University. So welcome, Michel.
Thank you for having me.
Great, so I'm happy to have you there today because it's interesting because we have someone who has a lot of impact on many people in real estate in Montreal. Not only in his career, successful career, but also on on Concordia University, and yeah, it's very interesting, especially now that we have at least 3 or 4 years that with a lot of change, we have COVID period that impact a lot of our real estate industry, Montreal and everywhere in the world. And after that, now we have the rates, you know, the fluctuation of the rates in the last year and a half. And it's interesting, and I would like, if I was a student, I would like to be on the seat right now to see what's going on and how we can learn from that. So, Michel, can you tell us a bit about yourself? And
Well, I have been in real estate for about 30 years, but to be honest, I'm an accountant by training.
Okay.
I am a CPA, or back then it was a CA. I started my career at, the PM of KPMG. It was then called Pete Marwick.
Okay.
Where I did 3 years in auditing, hated 2 years and 11 months and 28 days of that, and ended up working in mergers and acquisitions for KPMG. It was the 80s, so it was a good time to do M&A work. Fortunately, the 80s became the 90s. My M&A clients ended up in the insolvency group, so it was time for new challenges. I went to a company called ABB that did everything to produce and transmit electricity. And I was a controller and deputy general manager of their treasury center, which was fascinating. I got to learn a lot about finance and derivative financial products. And it's what opened up the door to me at Ivanhoe. So
okay.
Ivanhoe Cambridge, when I started, was not Ivanhoe Cambridge. It was Ivanhoe. So the case had bought the subsidiary, the real estate subsidiary of the Steinbergs. And they now wanted to expand into bigger shopping centers and expand into the U.S. So they hired me to really develop their foreign exchange hedging strategies, to find them capital, to finance their new acquisitions. And I got to spend about 70% of my time for 2 years on the acquisition of Cambridge Shopping Center.
Okay, wow.
So Cambridge was a public company in the Toronto Stock Exchange back then. So we managed to privatize that company, and once they were merged into Ivanhoe Cambridge, I became vice president of finance. So I got to work on the merger, and I got to work on their international expansion. I had teams in Europe, in the States, and in Canada.
So you had a chance to make transaction a little bit everywhere?
Yeah, I actually had finance teams in Madrid, in Frankfurt, in Glasgow, in Miami, to add to the Toronto and Montreal and Calgary teams. So it was great to work for Ivanhoe Cambridge. It was truly, they were expanding, they were going international, and it was just a great learning experience. Then in 2008, the case decided to, consolidate their real estate debt investments into a new subsidiary, which we ultimately called Oterra Capital.
Okay.
I was named CFO and executive vice president, so I helped start Oterra Capital. We started in the middle of the financial crisis and in the change of management at the Caisse de dépôt. But we did finally emerge from that period to be the largest real estate lender in Canada. So I stayed there for 10 years. And then in 2018, something wonderful happened. I turned 55.
Okay.
I always said I was going to finish my career teaching, and that's what I'm doing now.
Wow, that's really good. What is the best or the most proud transaction you did in Montreal or Europe? And what was the best project?
I mean, the Cambridge acquisition for a finance guy was a crowning glory. I mean, we took a public company. We did the acquisitions by steps. So first transaction, we took control. Second transaction, we managed to squeeze out all the rest of the shareholders. We set legal precedents in how we handled convertible debentures and how do we squeeze out minority convertible debenture holders So, you know, as a finance guy, I think that transaction was probably the best transaction or the one I'm most proud of.
How long it takes just to do a transaction like that?
It was 2 years. So, 2 years, well, wow. 2 years, very public. In the background, we were acquiring shares every year for 4 years before that transaction. But really, it was 2 years to do in two transactions.
Wow, that's incredible. And in 2 years, we know how market can shift. So it's not easy because you make a decision 24 months ago. And now, you know, we're doing it right now. We'll see what's happening in the last 24 months of the real estate in Montreal. And with all the rates, it's moving so fast. So that's interesting. So that's congratulations. So I'm very happy. And after that, why are you going to Concordia? Why are you going to give back?
Like I said, I've always loved teaching. And I've always said I was going to finish my career teaching. And I think I happened to be the right place at the right time at Concordia. Jonathan Weiner, our chancellor, and then the founder of Canderel, had donated $10 million to the university, $3 million of which to start real estate education programs at Concordia.
Okay.
So I think Concordia tried and did a few missteps along the way in establishing that program. And then I happened to come in just at the right time. It was something I've always loved building things. I built departments or companies throughout my career. So I figured I could build the real estate center. And it's been quite good. We started, I guess, officially in 2020.
Okay.
With 30 students.
Online or?
Yeah, mostly. Yeah. And now we're over 200 students in our real estate minor program at Concordia. And we continue to build. So I think that's been quite good.
That's interesting. And if we're, a young student or someone who want to go into real estate and learn about real estate, I'll just not miss this question. It's very important. How someone can go in Concordia and what's the first step to go in to the center?
Well, you have to be a BCom student.
Okay.
So the students we want to graduate that are entering the industry, we want them to be well-rounded business people first. So they have to understand the basics of finance, marketing, accounting. But then we layer on specialty real estate knowledge. So how do they take that knowledge and adapt it to the real estate industry? So we do want all of our students to graduate with a bachelor's degree in commerce,
okay,
to which we add the real estate component to it. So they do have to apply to Concordia. They do have to get into the Bachelor of Commerce program, and then they can do a subspecialty in real estate. So that's how they can sort of get into it.
Okay. And so what's the program? What part of real estate are you going to touch? Going to finance? Going to be managing? It's going to be...
Well, you know, it's funny because right now we're a real estate minor. So okay. They take their major and they can take a real estate minor. And we're trying to develop a real estate major, and that's going to take a few more years. Right now, we offer courses in real estate law, in urban planning, in real estate development, in real estate finance, and in real estate investment. I'd say we're a little bit more axed towards the finance side of things right now, but we are continuing to develop.
Okay, great. Anyway, with your background, I think this is a great the great start, you know, because finance is at the art of real estate investing, and I think we need to understand that properly.
Yeah, and you know what? One of the things that we did well is we developed an advisory board when we started all of this. So we have 11 top real estate professionals from Montreal on our advisory board, and they've helped us with the curriculum. And that's the one thing they all agree on. They don't all agree on everything, but the one thing they do all agree on is the importance of the finance aspects, of the math aspects of real estate. Because we teach commercial real estate. We don't really touch much on residential real estate. So they're all in agreement on how important that is. So we have a big focus on that.
Okay, that's great. That's very interesting. So I'm very happy to have someone with your knowledge here today. And maybe let's get you a little bit, pick your brain. And where do real estate, investment in real estate industry, commercial, especially commercial real estate, is going the next few years? And we have been through the last 18 to 24 months really shake the industry. We we saw some good things happening. And at the same time, we have some, you know, the velocity of the market just dropped. You know, everybody stopped to move, stopped buying, stopped selling. Stop developing. And that's created a lot of problem right now with the lack of supply, you know, for the rentals property, especially with the... But one of the buzzwords that we hear right now in real estate is ESG, okay? Can you tell me a little bit about ESG and how do you see it and how do you think it can apply for commercial real estate?
Yeah, ESG is very much of a buzzword. And depending on who you ask, you get different definitions of ESG, okay? But let's go back even further. You know, I was around when the industry was talking about LEED certification, right? And I remember back then, at least around the board that I was around, you know, the question was, well, how much is this going to cost us? Is there a profit to be made with being LEED certified? With ESG, the conversation is very different from what I hear, right? We all have much more social conscience now than what we did 20, 30 years ago. And I think the industry is not just seeing it as a burden, but they're seeing it as a responsibility now. So I think, you know, I think the industry is approaching it much more positively and with, you know, perhaps a better outlook for it. Net zero is the buzzword that I'm hearing all the time.
Yes.
How do we make our buildings net zero so they don't contribute to the problem of carbon? They are net zero or even absorb. And I think that's a big challenge for a lot of the industry because there's costs associated with it. And you know, developers are still developers. And yes, we want to be social responsible, but not at the cost of going bankrupt. So I think the cost of that is still a problem for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of exploration going around. I know Concordia has multiple research projects on ESG. So I think that's going forward, that's going to become a little bit clearer, but I think it's still a little murky right now.
But do we see some incentive from the bank? Because now, you know, with your specialty in finance, I was in Cannes, France at the MIPIM last year, and everybody was talking about ESG and especially about green loan, green bonds.
Yeah.
And I was on a conference, and the people were talking that they will be able to give around, you know, 20 points, 30 points less on the interest rate just, you know, to finance a net zero building. The problem they had at that time, it was in Europe, and they said, we don't have enough project to finance right now, but we have a lot of money that needs to go directly to net zero building.
Yeah, and I think that's true. And I think some of it's marketing, obviously. But who can really take advantage of that right now? It's the big institutionals. Right, they are the ones that are building the buildings that are big enough to absorb these costs, to include these technologies. So they are benefiting from perhaps better financing rates through green financing. But what about the smaller developer who's, you know, building 200 units in Pointe Claire? Is he really benefiting from the availability of green financing? Not yet. But I think as the industry goes forward, it's not going to be, you're not going to do ESG in order to get better financing. It's just going to become a demand of the industry. Like, would we produce a building now that is not LEED certified? Absolutely not. And even the smaller developers are doing buildings that are LEED certified. I think that's going to be the norm going forward. You know, net zero buildings, they're going to start with the institutionals, they're going to start with major projects, and eventually trickle down to the smaller projects and the smaller developers.
And that's where the masses will go. And that's very interesting because I'm sure that some tenants, they want to rent a building. Do you think they are already asking the question?
I think some tenants are. Just like when we saw LEED certification emerge, you know, it was... For a lot of tenants, it was the ability to say in their annual report, hey, look at us. We care about the environment. We only go to LEED certified buildings. Like I said, I think we'll see some of that with ESG. you know, hey, look at us. Aren't we only lease from net zero buildings? But I think it goes deeper this time. I just think that the consciousness is more pronounced this time than 20, 30 years ago. And it's not just going to be a marketing ploy for a lot of companies. I think it's going to be viewed as a social responsibility from the employees all the way to the executives.
That's good. That's good conscience. Because, and we see right now, because now we talk about environment, but we also have the social part of it. And if you see in the last 24 and in the last 12 months in Montreal, in Greater Montreal, the most active buyer for a rental property are social subsidies from the city. Okay, we have Interloge, Bâtir, just to name those two, and they bought a lot of buildings, and they were able to get the ball rolling, even with the interest rate going up. I think they take the opportunity to buy some building, and with the social, you know. Social, like, je pourrais dire, avec un objectif social en arrière de ça. Donc, ça aussi, on voit, that's going to help the industry also and go forward with the social part of it.
Yeah, I mean, if we could make that work as an investment model through incentives, I think that would be a great model to have. I think, you know, one of the big problems we have in Canada with housing is this, it takes forever to get zoning and permits from the cities, to the point where if you have to hold land 2, 3, 4 years before you can start building, you know, I have a lot of clients that just won't come to Montreal. They'll build all around Montreal, but they won't come to Montreal because it simply takes too long. So what happens is if you do not have new stock, then the buildings that are 20, 25 years old that would now usually be lower rent or not lower rent because this new stock's not coming in fast enough so they can continue to have elevated rents. So I think, you know, when we talk about social housing, I'm much more on the supply side than anything else. I think we need to increase the supply by building, not just converting existing buildings into social housing. Because there are simply not enough supply to meet the demand right now.
Absolutely. That was my next question. So we can go with this, because if you see right now, this is, we hear from CHMC, every major player, everybody talking about lack of supply. So what do you think, what's the solution, as an industry? Or, how do you position yourself? And first of all, how do we came to that result right now? Because it is a problem, because we are a couple of hundreds of thousand apartment under the needs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how we got there. For sure, we're missing apartments, we're missing homes for individuals. I think the cities had a big role to play. I think if you continuously get in the way of the market, the market just sort of disappears or goes away or goes somewhere else or does something else. And I think the cities, unfortunately, really have done a poor job of partnering with real estate developers. You know, for a while there, I don't know about post-pandemic, but pre-pandemic, it was almost adversarial sometimes between the cities and the real estate developers. And it has to be much, much more of a partnership. We have to be able to build faster and not hold land for years in the hopes that we'll possibly get a zoning change. I think the cities need to adapt more to the market. They need to be less bureaucratic and really work in partnership with real estate developers much more than what they have been. And just look at, you know, Montreal. I mean, I'm from Montreal. We have this famous 20-20-20 rule.
Yeah.
Was the intention great? Absolutely. The intention was, you can't argue with the intention, right? You know, we need social housing. We need affordable housing. Hey, let's try and get that going. But they did it to the detriment of the market. So real estate developers could no longer make a profit or sell a good investment return to their investors and simply went elsewhere to build or did not build.
Because we saw it. We saw that the first of all, the cost of the construction costs went up big times in 2020. And after that, they stopped to, start to stabilize. But right after that, the interest rate went up. And when interest went up, that's it. Everything, that was the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, a bit of a double boom, I guess, from, as a result of the pandemic, I think. Definitely there were some supply issues and the construction costs went up. So the pro formas no longer made sense. And a lot of people in the industry just said, well, we'll wait. We'll wait for the prices to stabilize. But like you said, right after that, interest rates went up. Okay, so we had the inflation and the resulting increase in interest rates. And again, the pro formas no longer made sense. But credit where credit is due, CMHC and the federal government have come up with programs, to help the developers, especially in residential housing, not so much in other forms of development that are of great benefit, okay, that have made it possible for developers to continue to build. So the CMHC programs have been very beneficial, and they've been a big plus.
In fact, PML, which is a financing division, we have, let's say it's about nearly 80% of our files to multi-res files that go to the MLI Select program,
right,
for CMHC.
Yes. Right. I think those programs are invaluable. What can we do to help that? I think those types of programs are really good. And I think if we could start partnering with the cities a little bit more, I think, the challenge would be better.
So you see from CHMC, okay, that's that came to the market at the right time, this program. What do you think the federal government or the provincial can do more? Let's talk about a fiscal incentive. What do you think can be done? Now we see that the taux cotisation au niveau de TPS was removed from the federal.
That is big. Yeah. And that's a huge cost. If the provinces can match that, you're changing the pro forma now, right? Because these
absolutely.
Are absolutely big bills that we face as developers, and we face them when our NOI isn't even stabilized yet, right? So as soon as somebody moves in, we're supposed to do this auto-cotisation.
Mm-hmm.
There's good and bad. The good is you can argue that the value is not there yet and lower the bill, but it is a cash flow problem.
Exactly.
And I think, I do like what the federal government is doing. If they can eliminate that auto-cotisation, I'm sorry, I don't know what that is in English. It's the self-assessment tax.
Sure.
If they can eliminate that, if the provinces can match that, plus you have the MLI Select programs, the CMHC programs, I think that financially, that will help a lot. But again, I know this is the fourth time I say it because I really believe it. You can put any program in the world you want. If I can't get the permits from the city to build, it's for naught.
Absolutely. And so when we see those incentives from Vern, do you think one day we'll go and like the 1031 exchange you see in the U.S.? Do you think
I don't know what the 1031 exchange is, so I'm going to say no. What is the 1031?
It's when you're selling a building,
right,
and you take that money and you reinvest in real estate in the same year, you don't pay the capital gains on it.
Oh, well, that would be interesting. So as a real estate developer, you could build, you could stabilize, sell it, not pay the capital gain as long as you reinvested
any real estate
into the new project within, fiscal year or two.
Exactly.
Absolutely, that will help. All of these things will help. But again, the models are stressed right now post-COVID with high interest rates, high inflation, high costs of constructions. That wasn't always the case, and we were managing to build even before that. Now, if you want us to build rapidly to address the social issues of a lack of housing, yeah, absolutely. The more of these incentive programs there are, the better it is, as long as we're allowed to build.
So government, Yusuf, federal, provincial, and at the end of the day, it's about the municipal. So about the efficiency, okay?
Yep.
And also, maybe they can do some subvention, they can help some, because now we have a tax for, and I was in Toronto, and I see the KingSett founder John Love was doing at a conference. You know, nice and a very credible person in on real estate, and he was talking about in Toronto that they have nearly 30% tax on each project just from the city, and that was a big problem because his vision was that the slowing down too much the new project. That cost them a lot of money because if you have 10 more buildings that's building, used buildings, selling in the city, that was built in the city last year, you're going to collect that tax for it. It's faster, everything. So he was really interested in this and he has some good comments about it. So what do you think is so about the taxes? We can improve from the city about the efficiency?
Absolutely. And you know, I think something like that would have probably been much more beneficial than the 20-20-20 rule, right? They could, you know, I think it would have opened up the market a lot more. It would have allowed for more projects. You would have replenished the stock. And those older buildings, the rents would have gone down, which they have not gone down, right? As now, even old buildings are full up and there's no...
And that's the thing, because now that's the, now they want to do the social housing, everything, but the way that they're managing the new construction is creating a rise, an augmentation des loyers d'une façon importante that we never saw before.
Absolutely. You know, there is no supply. Therefore, supply and demand means the rents are going to stay on.
So the solution, okay, if I can resume, is the...
I like the incentives. I think the federal government is trying, and I like the programs they've done. I think if the provinces can match those if in certain ways, perhaps not in the financing, but at least in the reduction of the self-assessment tax. And I mean, for the fifth time, I think the cities need to do a better job in partnering with the industry. Whether, you know, they can afford to give us tax incentives, we'll see. But just getting rid of the 3-4 year lead time it takes to do a project would help tremendously. Tremendously.
Okay. Wow. Michel, with all the experience you got, you've been to many real estate cycle.
The last one's been kind of long, though.
But, you know, I started in real estate in 2003.
Yeah.
So everybody, when I was starting my career in real estate, they were talking to me about the 90s and how it was difficult.
Terrible.
And so on. And I was on a good run since 2003 to last year, you know. I never had any down cycle,
right?
So it was the first one. So we learned a lot in the last year, and we're happy because PML we still have strive and take some market share. But at the end of the day, it was really not easy. And it's interesting. So now that we went through that, and we see now we are in January, 11. And we see that the CMB rates are about 360 today.
Yeah.
And and it went down from over 100 points since last October. So do you have any forecast? What do you think is going to happen the next? It's not an easy question, but, you know.
Crystal
ball. And where do you think we're heading right now? Is it a good time?
I think interest rates are coming down. Okay, I think, you know, you look at, you know, what's the rhetoric from the U.S. Reserve, you look at the Bank of Canada, there's just a focus there on being able to tell everybody we've controlled inflation and interest rates are coming down. So I think they will ultimately, you know, be successful like that. Will it be done in the next 6 months? I don't think so. But I think interest rates are coming down. What does that mean for the real estate industry? I mean, you know, interest rates, you know, for the first time in years, we have seen a negative leverage effect, right, in the industry. So the cap rates were actually lower than the cost of financing. So I think if we can get the financing back in line and go back to a positive leverage effect, I think that'll be positive for the real estate industry as a whole, especially in the multi-res and the industrials where the cap rates are so low. I think where we're going to have, or where we're continuing to have some issues is office and retail. So, you know, we talked about COVID, and I think it was Jonathan Weiner, I sat on a panel with him, and he called it the great accelerator. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, You know, work from home was already there before COVID, but it accelerated the trend greatly. Internet shopping to the detriment of brick and mortar stores was already starting. It accelerated greatly. So I think it's those two sectors that, will be facing new challenges and that need to reinvent themselves a little bit. I mean, we're not an industry historically that has changed very quickly. Well, now this is provoking us to change quicker than we usually do as an industry. And I think that's why we're seeing the impact, the severe impact on office. I think the impact is probably exaggerated. You know, I've continuously said throughout the pandemic, ask any CEO what his biggest and greatest asset is, and he will always say his employees. And I've always been of the view that you cannot build corporate culture, you cannot build loyalty without face-to-face interactions that you don't get on Zoom or on Teams, and that eventually the companies will see that in their bottom line and in their productivity, and people will have to come back. I think we're just seeing that now, right? Like you talk to a lot of people in the office space and, oh yeah, we're trying to get our employees back at least 3 days a week. We're getting a lot of resistance. But I think companies are realizing how important face-to-face interactions are in the bottom line of a company. So I think you saw the fall of office space a little bit accelerated, and I think that's going to start to plateau out, and eventually, you know, we'll get reabsorbed. What's interesting is retail.
Yeah, you know, and you were talking about the employees, and in fact, PMML was one of the first. I remember February 28, 2022, and it was not obligatory to work from home as a service company. And the day that the government said is now optional, we said everybody's home, mean at the office. And since that time, we 5 days a week, everybody's there all the time. And I think this is not easy. We lost some employees because of that. But at the end of the day, exactly what you're saying about some people try to bring back people to the office by not giving the option, it was not an easy decision. But today, when we see the result we had in the last 2 years, compared to the other company in the market, I think we achieved something special about it. It was not easy. I'm sure we lost some talent about it. As I'm sure that we went doing some interview, that we lost some good people because we say it's 9 to 5 at the office. But on the other side, we attract a lot of good talent because they want to go to the office. Someone who was 25 years old versus someone who's 45, someone that's 20, because our employees are a little bit, you know, can say the majority is under 35, and they want to get that working vibes.
Yeah.
Okay. Someone at 45, maybe they already did the 5 to 7, you know, like I said, and all the happy hour, but someone who started his career want to be with other people, and that's the human nature. I'm agree with you on this. I think you cannot build a culture at home.
I always say too, you know, you started by asking me, you know, what was my proudest transaction, and that was the acquisition at Cambridge. But unfortunately, I got put in charge of that merger too. So merging two companies is tremendously challenging. So we were merging from the corporate side, and I was in charge of that, and just by the nature of the work, right, you needed the heads, not extra arms. You know, the employees weren't working 9 to 5. They were there, you know, 5 to 9. I think we were able to get through that as a company because we had created a culture, because we had created a team, because we could, you know, sit in front of each other's desks at 4 o'clock and complain about it,
exactly.
Right? Because as a manager, I could intervene quicker because I could hear things. You won't be able to do that on Teams.
Absolutely. And we have a sense, and you see when some, and anyway, it's, I think we'll see the future, but I'm happy to have bet on to go back to work in person. And at the end of the day, it's all about the direction. So we were talking about office and retail.
Yeah. I think that will bounce the office a little bit. Retail, I think, is a bigger challenge. I think there needs to be some reinvention in retail. I think, too often, you go to the brick and mortar store just to look at the product, and then you go home and you order it on Amazon because it's cheaper.
Exactly.
So there has to be, I guess, a new business model. There has to be a certain amount of reinvention there. I have no idea what that could be, but I do think that one is probably the most challenging of all the vocations.
But we see some incredible resilience on the market. When COVID happened, everybody was, with the lockdown, everything that's happening, it's about the retail, what's happened to retail. And,
right.
And what happened even with the multi-res, the tenants will be able to pay and so on. And after that, we went out. In fact, everybody went, the real estate went booming in that period for many, many reasons, industrial. And now we go back to the shopping center. We just passed Christmas and it was full.
Was it?
No. Yeah, it was full. It was full. And also all the major shopping center was full. You see a lot of people. I don't know if they were only see and order online, but the parking were full. And we saw incredible reason. I was never thinking that it's going to go back that fast. And now we see the same thing with real estate. So with the multi-res, when the rates are going up that fast, we're thinking, the market price, the net price will go down. So if you look from all the transactions 2023 versus 2022, maybe 4%, 5%, the drop of the price, not that much.
No.
So, but.
But why would there be? There's so much demand for multi-res. Why don't we reduce?
Exactly.
I'm not so sure retail is that way. But I, hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's interesting because, the industry is in transformation. So what do you think is going to happen in the next 2 years?
I honestly don't know.
Okay.
And one of the interesting things about retail in Canada is all major shopping centers are, almost all of them, are owned by institutionals that have very deep pockets that are willing to absorb losses for the long term. If this were held by, family offices, I'm not so sure we'd see the same resilience that we're seeing now. And I'm not so sure there isn't a little bit of, call it subsidies from the institutional investors right now to try and stabilize that market. I think, super regional shopping centers will always have a big attraction. I think it's more, the smaller community shopping centers that are going to struggle first. I mean, the smaller retail, you always need bread, you always need milk, there'll always be a dry cleaner and a bank, and, the strip malls are doing fine. I think the super regionals, there is an entertainment aspect to that. I know my daughters drag me to Café Laval every Christmas. It's the only time we go, but every Christmas they drag me there, and it's an entertainment aspect. But what about the community malls? What about, Café Laval Grignon?
Exactly.
Place des Sources.
So Café Laval is full, but what about the Centre Laval,
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not that far away. Are they as resilient? That's the big question, I think.
Michel, Ivanhoe, Cambridge, okay. Caisse de dépôt, what they called you today. And I like to ask this question.
Uh-oh.
I said, Michel, we give you $100 million, $100 million. And we want you to maximize that money in real estate. It was not a question I already knew about, but I'm asking the question, what's your strategy? Where you go? Would you go multi-res, you go industrial, you go retail, you go specifically on, do you stay in Quebec? Do you go in Ontario? You go south of the border?
I would think I would go outside of the major urban cores.
Okay.
I think the major urban cities, Montreal, Toronto, Calgary, 100 million is not enough. I don't think the growth will be as spectacular. But look at what happened to Kitchener, Waterloo. Guelph.
Guelph, yeah.
Take a look at those cities. And I think I would look for the secondary markets.
Okay.
because I think that's where the growth is going to be. I think the urban centers are too expensive. I think the work from home and the remote working has opened up the eyes of perhaps we don't need to be in downtown Toronto all the time. Perhaps downtown Kitchener works.
Absolutely.
So I think I would look more to secondary markets if I only had $100 million.
Only that? That's great.
Only that. And I think I would look at I would probably bet on multi-residential.
Okay.
And some industrial. I think those would be my bets for those.
Okay. And I'll get again in secondary market.
Yeah, I think
okay. So and when we saw what's happening with Granby in Montreal, we saw what's happening in Saint-Jérôme and Mirabel and all those neighborhoods. It's incredible, the growth, Vaudreuil, and we, you know, that's where people, so the COVID bring people outside of the city.
Yep.
And now they need to build all the shopping center to win all the retail, all the schools, institutional also.
And it's easier to build. You don't have 4 years of zoning. It's just easier. You will deploy your capital quicker.
That's interesting because on the Multires Forum in February, Montreal, you're going to have, I think it's 28th of February, you're going to have a panel over there that talking about if you want to build in the city of Montreal versus Sherbrooke or other city, what's the difference?
Yeah.
And I'm very anxious to see that panel and to see the result for it.
I have a client that's just started a new project in Vaudreuil. To get the entitlements was super fast, super fast. He will finish building over, I think it's over 200 units in Vaudreuil in a shorter amount of time that it would have taken to get the building permits in downtown Montreal.
Oh my God. Okay. That's a big difference.
That's
a game changer, in fact, for them, because, you know, that's how they make money, by rolling the money faster.
Absolutely.
That's how build their do their money.
Absolutely.
The faster the project are going, the faster they get back their money and all the cash on cash and the NOI, everything's going in that direction.
And because these secondary markets are experiencing such growth, your stabilization period, yeah, it's a little longer than downtown Montreal, sure. But it's not outrageous either.
Exactly. And the fact, the difference of the price per square foot in the industrial versus or rental property at suburbs versus Montreal has never been so, jamais été aussi proche au niveau des différences. So you see that, and that's make a big difference. So that's why your strategy, embrace it. So I will mess with you. So Michel, thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for to take the time to sit down with us today and share your knowledge. And again, invite you to if you show some interest in real estate and you are at Concordia in university and you want to go deeper in that real estate, I think Michel will and all the organization can help for that.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to reach out.
Thank you. Merci, Michel.
Bienvenue. Merci.
Thank you.